Hello and welcome to another episode of the Leo Alves podcast. And in today's episode, I have a guest with me who's been on before. His name is Miguel. And actually, this is the first podcast episode I'm ever doing face to face with another person. It's always been over Zoom. So this is going to be something different for me as well. But otherwise, again, he's been on the podcast before. So I'll let him introduce himself. Maybe we could do a 60 second summary and then we'll go from there. So over to you, Miguel.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. It's an honor to be here face to face. I know for you listening, nothing changes, but for us, it's quite interesting. So my 60-second elevator pitch. My name is Miguel Minch. I work as a PT and nutrition coach, much like Leo. I have a background in cookery, and if I had to describe myself, I would say I'm a food and muscle nerd. I like living a healthy lifestyle and everything that's about food, nutrition, or just how to feel good, look good, and live, pretty damn awesome lifestyle. That's what I care about. So without further ado, let's get back to the podcast.
You've got 10 seconds left. I'm playing. Okay, so actually, you did ask me before the podcast if I had anything in mind to speak about, and yeah, I said I did, and something sprang to mind quite spontaneously, 10 minutes before the podcast, that I thought would be quite good to speak about, because I've never really spoken about this before, and I don't know how much you'll have to say about it, but what's your opinion on just caffeine, and maybe just coffee in general, caffeine, because I feel there's a lot that could potentially be said about it, and I was just curious about where your mind goes with it.
Okay, so I find this very curious because we didn't talk about this before recording, but I am in the middle of a no caffeine experiment.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I usually drink maybe 1 to 2 cups of coffee every day. But right now I haven't had a single coffee in the past maybe almost 30 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How's that going?
It's going pretty well, actually.
I'm so happy I picked this as a subject, because now I feel like I've got so much to ask you already about it. Yeah. So what made you... continue before I even ask other questions.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure you have a lot of questions, and it's been an interesting experiment. Maybe I should just give a bit of background information on why I decided to do this. So from a nutrition background, caffeine is definitely, a very effective and studied supplement, if you can call it that. I'm not just talking about coffee, actually caffeine, although most people consume caffeine with their coffee. So for me, I've always liked having a cup of coffee in the morning and one after lunch. It's like a good pick-me-up, not necessarily something I needed, but something I enjoyed. But then recently I was in Mexico with a friend. And he's always also in the health and fitness space. And we were talking about stimulants and how caffeine is probably the most consumed drug in the world. And because it's so accessible, people don't even stop to think about the long-term effects of just having multiple coffees per day, or what it could be doing, not just from a performance standpoint, like using caffeine to boost your workouts or have a bit of energy, but if it could be also tinkering with your mood or your habitual energy levels. For example, one of the things we talked about was if you get accustomed to taking coffee every day and then you stop, then you'll feel like shit. But if you never take caffeine and then you use caffeine sporadically as a way of increasing your cognition or your performance, then you can get more out of it than if you're always taking it. So that was one of the points that kind of made me reevaluate or just question my habits. I do intend to go back to drinking coffee after I think when I feel I'm ready. But yeah, there was a lot that went into that discussion, and it made me realize, okay, maybe I'll give it a try and stop drinking coffee for a bit to see how I feel. And yeah, here I am.
Wow. So, and you said today is day 30?
No, but I'm getting close to it. Today's April 1st. So I think I stopped drinking coffee on the 6th or 5th of March. So that's 20 something days.
And how was the first few days?
So I've quit coffee before, like cold turkey, and I remember those first days or first week, it was really awful. Like no energy and headaches, the usual stuff. But this time, so I quit while I was traveling back to Portugal. So I was in a 16-hour flight, I think. So I didn't have any coffee because I wanted to sleep. And then when I got back home, I didn't have any coffee at home. So I didn't have any coffee for 2 days just because I was out of coffee. And then when I noticed 3 days had gone by, I was still feeling pretty good. And I was like, you know what? This is a sign from the gods. I'm not going to have any coffee for how long this experiment will last. So I haven't had any side effects really. Maybe on the first week, I think I slept a lot more than usual. So usually I'd say I sleep anywhere between 7 to 9 hours. On those first maybe 3 to 4 days, I slept like 10 to 13. But again, is it the caffeine or what is it? Because I was also tired from a long trip and my
Jet lag, circadian
exactly,
rhythm.
exactly, yeah. So I was jet lagged. It's a 5 hour difference from Mexico and Portugal, which isn't huge,
That's
but
less than I thought.
yeah. When I came back from Bali, it's an 8 hour difference, and that was tough. But yeah, jet lag, tired, no caffeine, all of those factors can definitely, change a lot of things. But yeah, I slept like a baby for the first week, 12 to 13 hours.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I now you mentioned jet lag, it wants me to I want to speak about that as well, but I've before we go even into anything else, I still want to speak about coffee more. And my history with so first of all, that is very interesting, everything you've said, and I want to like give you a bit of background on my history with coffee, so then we have more context for the conversation that we're having. But I don't think I ever had a cup of coffee, and this is going to surprise a lot of people. I think the first time I ever had a cup of coffee was when I was actually 22.
Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, I held off on it a long time. I was just never interested in having it, and yeah, I didn't care for it. And then I remember the first few times I had coffee, like from the off, I would say I was quite good with it because I would never have more than one a day. So, because I was aware that it could be like quite a good tool, almost you could say, to have like the caffeine is like a really good boost or pick me up, or like just like a almost like a like great for a pre-workout, for example. And I kind of would use it for that, and I didn't want to get too desensitized to it, so I'd never have more than one a day. And until this day, I stick to that rule for myself. I never have more than one a day. Very rarely have I had two in the same day. I think I could count on maybe two hands when I've had two on the same day. And I'll never forget the first few times I had coffee after going through an entire life of never having coffee. I remember it was just like a regular coffee, nothing special, not strong. I remember it would like have me on high alert. Like I felt like very stimulated, or I don't, or I can't even think of a better word for it right now, but it definitely was a huge pickup, and I could feel I was very sensitive to it. And the more time has gone, like instantly I quite liked coffee quite a lot, and it started becoming a part of my routine before I knew it, and I would have one like every morning, and that's how I have it, just every morning, and then that's it. And nowadays when I think about it, I'm definitely not as like sensitive to it as when I first started, naturally. But yeah, like it is something I've just thought about, like should I stop drinking it? And then I thought, even though I'm like less sensitive to it nowadays, I feel like I'm quite good at it. Because, and the reason why I say I'm quite good, I feel like I'm quite good with it, or maybe it's just like I feel like I'm maybe more mindful of it compared to a lot of people, because in the Portuguese culture, as you're born and raised in Portugal. I'm born and raised in London, England, but my parents are Portuguese. I've come to Portugal every summer and I live here nowadays. So, we're two people who are very aware of Portuguese culture. And maybe this is not just Portuguese culture, but like Southern European culture as a whole, where it's just they love their espresso. And I see people here, family members included, friends included, who maybe don't give a damn about health and fitness so much. It's wake up, espresso. Breakfast, espresso. Lunch, espresso. Dinner, espresso. Like afternoon snack, espresso. Before bed, espresso. I'm not exaggerating. I see this a lot. And can you relate on that part where that's what you do see in some people?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's like I don't even know how it gets like it's just I guess a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
these people, but by that point, you're definitely desensitized to it, right? Or what? Like, I'm sure there's like some effects that maybe someone who knows a lot more about caffeine could speak to me about, because I'd be lying if I said I was an expert on caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
But you look like you were going to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not an expert on caffeine, but I don't like saying I did my research. But when I did my master's degree in sports nutrition, caffeine was a hot topic as well. And we did discuss more than just the performance benefits. And over the years, just basically, again, I love going deep into rabbit holes about different things. So caffeine has definitely been one of those topics that I wanted to know more about, not just, again, not just the performance and health benefits, but what it can actually do in terms of the brain. Again, I'm not a neuroscientist, so I'm not an expert on this area. But, and this is where it's interesting, when I was in Mexico with that friend of mine, we had dinner with one of his good friends, and he is a neuroscientist. And he was actually the one that made me question my habitual caffeine intake. So the way he was describing the effects of long-term caffeine consumption on the brain and how it can kind of affect your just natural energy levels, that's what kind of made me question myself, as in, okay, why am I taking caffeine? What am I getting out of it? Is it a crutch, or is it something that I truly enjoy? And I think this is very beneficial, not just for caffeine, but any habit that you might have, be it related to health and fitness or anything else. Just sometimes we've been doing the same things we've been doing for months, years, and we don't question them. We just assume that it is what it is. So sometimes I find that it's important to stop and question yourself, okay, where am I? What are my current goals? And how are my habits serving me, if they're serving me? So caffeine was one of those. And one of the examples I can give you, completely unrelated to performance, but just general well-being, was sometimes I felt like just working, I would get anxious, or even just at home by myself, just working on something, I would feel stressed, or just my heart would start racing a bit. And I thought maybe caffeine, or maybe reducing my caffeine intake, could somehow improve that. And I want to say it did help a bit, but at the same time, I noticed that what helped even more than the caffeine was learning how to cope with stress and work. So again, I always say to my clients and just anyone looking at nutrition or health and fitness, there are so many different variables that it's always difficult to pinpoint the exact reason why something has changed. Like, you can stop drinking caffeine and suddenly you feel better, but you might have changed something in your routine or your diet as well that's contributing to that, and you don't even know. So that's one thing. But again, I think maybe it's easier if I go back to you in terms of questions you might have about or caffeine or coffee, because I'm already going on a complete tangent here. But there's a lot that this experiment has been teaching me. So yeah, maybe let's start with that. Do you have any questions that are going on your mind right now? Because I can see you looking at me.
No, it's to be honest, like, you said you do plan to reintroduce it. Do you think you'll be going back to having one in the morning and one at lunch? Or do you think if you reintroduce it, it'll be something maybe just one a day? Or like, do you think you would approach it differently to how you were before?
So usually, and this is interesting because you did, like when you said the Portuguese love their coffee and their espresso, that's true. There's a lot of people here, they like having an espresso after dinner, and we have dinner very late in the evening. So sometimes, I don't know, it's very common for people to finish their meal at 9 or 10 p.m. and then chug an espresso and just carry on with their evening.
Yeah, and it has no effect. And I'm just like, what the hell? Like, if that was me, if I'm having an espresso before sleep, I'm not sleeping that night.
I mean, it has no effect. At least that's what most people say. And
then, yeah. That's what they say. I think it could be a... And I know, sorry for interrupting, but like... I think maybe they're so normalized, like the feeling of caffeine or an espresso impacting their sleep is so normalized to them that they don't realize that it's impacting them anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Again, going back to the habits, if you've been doing something for God knows how long, you might not even think it's related to poor sleep quality. For example, if you usually have an espresso every night and, you know, most nights you can actually sleep, but then some nights you have a bit of insomnia, like you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't go back to sleep. Maybe you don't even think it's the espresso, it's something else. Maybe you're stressed, maybe it's that deadline that's coming up. But there are two, I think, major points here. One of them is different people metabolize caffeine differently. So some people can metabolize, am I saying that right? I think so.
Metabolize,
yeah. Process caffeine faster than others. And those people, they might be able to have an espresso after dinner and they can pretty much sleep with no issues at all. And then people that take longer to process caffeine, they might have an espresso at 3 p.m. and they might feel like their sleep quality is impaired. For me, usually I have a cutoff point about maybe 2-3 p.m. So I'll have one coffee in the morning just because I like that. And then I'll have another coffee after lunch also because I like that. The way it kind of complements the meal. But I guess that's a very cultural thing because now I'm not necessarily having coffee, but I still maintain the habit with decaf. And I know some people, they hate decaf. They think it's even worse than coffee and it has no benefits. And I think there's a lot to discuss there, especially because...
Do you like decaf?
I love decaf, yeah. If it's good quality decaf, I love it. Again, because I like the taste of coffee. You know, if you remove caffeine from the coffee, sure, it's not the same thing, but it's still quite good, in my opinion. But again, and this is interesting in the research as well. So coffee seems to have some protective health effects. For example, in terms, I think habitual coffee consumption has been associated with lower risk of cardiovascular disease or some protective effects in some types of cancer. If I'm not mistaken, colorectal cancer is one of them. But the same thing is not has not been observed in decaf, which is kind of interesting because if you just remove the caffeine from it, somehow it changes the effects it has. And for me, it was really sad to hear about that because I was like, maybe I can still get the benefits if I'm drinking decaf. But it doesn't seem to be that way. It doesn't seem to happen that way. Anyways, I drink it mostly because I enjoy it. But I do plan to reintroduce caffeine at some point, mainly because, again, probably a cultural thing and just... I do like my coffee.
I love my coffee. That's why I was thinking, I've been asking myself, I ask myself time to time, should I, you know, have a break from coffee? And I'm just like, I don't feel like I need one. Like, I could maybe do with one, but I feel like I have a fairly good relationship with it. What I do try and do, though, is maybe like, and I could probably do just more. But because, you're like you said, maybe there is some value in stopping a habit when you kind of like just have been doing it routine for so long. But like maybe every 2 weeks, I won't have coffee for one day, which I know is nothing. But even then, that day is just like, it's not the same. Because I guess I've also associated coffee with just like starting my day now. And that's just something interesting as well that I've... thought about. But yeah, I thought it would be quite an interesting topic to speak about. What about using a coffee for like a pre-workout? Because I do quite like doing that as well.
Yeah.
Or espresso.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
And if you don't usually drink coffee, then, you know, if you do have a coffee before your workout, it's definitely going to pack a punch and you're going to feel it. And then for those of us that drink coffee pretty much every day, if you do have, you know, a tough workout coming up and you do need that extra boost, like extra boost, you can always ramp up the dosage and just have more coffee. I know that for a lot of people that this depends. If you usually have one coffee per day, having two or even three on one given day, it's probably not going to be the end of the world. But if you're like most Portuguese and you're drinking, I'm going to say anywhere between 3 to 5 espressos per day. Some people
that's
more.
Insane to me still.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't recommend going, you know, beyond 5.
Surely, like, beyond even maybe 2 or 3, this is probably like or even, I think, even 1. I don't know. Again, I'm no expert on caffeine or coffee. Isn't there shown to be, like, a negative effect on blood pressure?
I mean, it could be. But then again, the individual context depends. But that's a good point. That's a very good point. And so, I'm not sure if I have the answer.
So I imagine with 5, yeah. Because yeah. I know it can negatively impact blood pressure for sure. I think, yeah. Again, I'm sure it's individualistic. Maybe, again. But yeah, I think if you're drinking 5 a day consistently for a long time, I would probably check my blood pressure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just to not to scare anyone, but just to be on the safe side.
Yeah. And again, most people drink coffee without even considering what's the effect it's having on their bodies. Yeah. You know, they just it's a cultural thing. It's something they do. They don't even think about it.
Mm.
If you've been dealing with you know, high levels of anxiety or poor sleep quality, you know, it might be related to how much coffee you're drinking. So sometimes I think for those people, it's an interesting experiment to, hey, again, I wouldn't recommend quitting caffeine or coffee cold turkey, which a lot of people do. They're like, okay, I'm stopping. And they go from 5 espressos to no espresso. And that's the end of the world. At least that first week, everything comes crashing down. It's a massive headache. And it's not fun. It's just not fun at all. But just try and reduce the amount of caffeine you're ingesting. So maybe go from 5 to 4 espressos on week 1, and then from 4 to 3 until eventually you go to 1. And if you're feeling ready, try going from 1 to 0. This is actually a bit of a tangent, but I do remember, and this might be interesting, one of the downsides, and this was probably the worst downside of when I stopped having coffee, was
so recently.
Recently. So I'm sure you know, and most people know, when you have that morning coffee, usually helps to get the, let's just call it, the digestive system working properly, and it's caffeine increases gastric motility. In other words, it helps you go to the bathroom in
that
the morning.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
So usually when you have a coffee in the morning, you might feel like, oh, time to go. Nature's calling.
Yeah.
For me, coffee always had that effect. No doubt.
Same.
Yeah. As soon as I stopped drinking coffee in the morning, the first week or maybe week and a half was really weird in the sense that I stopped feeling need to go to the bathroom every morning, and I actually had a bit of constipation for like I would say 2 to 3 days.
Interesting.
Yeah, despite eating a lot of fiber as usual. So again, just to give a bit of a reference value, I'd say for most people, usually I recommend a minimum of like 25 grams of fiber, depending if you're a man or a woman, but usually around that 25 grams of ballpark numbers is a good place to be. And I was eating roughly the usual 35 to 40 grams of fiber per day, so fiber wasn't necessarily an issue, but I was still dealing with constipation even despite being, you know, physically active, like training, drinking plenty of water, eating lots of fruits and vegetables. And the only thing, at least in my opinion, that changed was the coffee.
But you said just for the first 3 days, right? And then I'm assuming you went back to normal?
Yeah. I would say it's getting better. It's definitely better. I feel like it's normalized now. But again, when I was having coffee, it was almost instant. I would have the coffee, and maybe in 5-10 minutes I'll go to the bathroom, easy. Now it's most days that kind of happens, but it's not the same feeling. And some days I'm just like, okay, this feels odd, because it's been, again, I've been drinking coffee for years now, so it's always been part of that morning routine, like get breakfast, get a coffee, go to the bathroom, start your day. And I know this might seem a bit
TMI
to discuss, but it's, on a podcast.
It's, no, it's interesting.
Yeah, but just
these, there's value in it.
Exactly, these are the tiny details that people care about, but they don't hear.
And they're important.
Yeah, for sure. Like if you're dealing with constipation, I'll be the first to say that it can mess up your day. Like you're not feeling great, and then you're like, you go about your day thinking about it. So yeah, that was one of the things that initially I felt like was making me reconsider just hopping back on my morning coffee. And it's also probably one of the main reasons that eventually I want to get back to having that morning coffee. Not necessarily because I think I need it to start the day.
Same.
Yeah, I actually feel this is a bit of a tough... it's a tough matter, because I like having that coffee in the morning because of the way it makes me feel. But at the same time, I don't like having that cup of coffee in the morning if I'm just going to do... if I'm just going to sit in front of the computer and work, because I don't need that, you know, jolt of energy first thing in the morning if I'm not going to train or if I'm not going to do anything physically demanding. Although you can say that coffee also helps you be a bit more sharp, like mentally sharp. So it depends. And just to kind of give a bit more nuance to this whole topic of the different effects caffeine can have. So I didn't have any issues with energy or appetite. It was mostly constipation. But I've had clients of mine that we've done some, just phases with no caffeine to resensitize their tolerance to caffeine. And some of them reported that their appetite skyrocketed. They were very hungry when they weren't having any caffeine. Some of them, you know, again, reported sleeping better and less anxiety throughout the day. And some, after that initial period of 1 to 2 weeks, reported just feeling even more energy, like more steady energy during the day instead of feeling like you need a nap in the afternoon. So again, it's interesting how we all react differently to the same thing. And again, I know this is dose dependent, so if you usually have one espresso, two, three, four, but it's quite interesting, and that's why I'm running this experiment.
Yeah. Anyway, we've spoken for, I think, about just over 25 minutes on the subject of coffee and caffeine, so I think it would be a good time to go on to the next one. But before I do, I think, yeah, you summarized everything very well. I guess if we had to summarize that conversation in some sort of way, then maybe you have your own one. I could say I think that caffeine, it can be an incredible tool to use, but it can also be a very easy tool to abuse at the same time. That wasn't meant to rhyme, but I guess it will stick in your head more now it does rhyme. So yeah, I think just be mindful of the way you do use it. And and you know what? Well, I think this is very important to mention as well. Maybe to some people it might sound obvious, maybe more to like Southern Europeans, but obviously there is a culture, I think, you know, this is me just speaking from my experience, I would say in the UK and the USA definitely, maybe there is more places like this, where when we're speaking about coffee, we mean actual coffee. So not with like 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 spoons of sugar and whipped cream on top and chocolate sprinkles and what might have a borderline cheesecake in. I mean, just like an actual, maybe like a coffee with some milk.
Yeah.
I think that might be important to establish, because, you know, when you add in all those other factors, then that can take the conversation down a whole load of other routes as well.
Yeah. we were definitely talking about coffee, like black coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to add a splash of milk, it would be my guess, but
yeah.
Definitely not the frappuccinos that have a bit of caffeine.
Because yeah, that's increasing in popularity now. And yeah, and when I've met people who, when they say coffee, that's what they mean. They don't mean like an espresso like we might do in Portugal.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think now is a good time. I can't believe it. I never thought I'd speak about coffee for 30 minutes today. But anyway, I think now is a good time to go on to the next conversation. And I was actually going to speak about ice baths, but I think jet lag can actually be quite interesting because it is something that a lot of people, I think more people are likely to go through jet lag within their life than they are to take an ice bath. So I think, you know, we can still speak about both, but I think there is more value in speaking about jet lag and how you said maybe, I don't know if an 8-hour difference was the worst that you felt. Mine was, I think, 9. And so a 9-hour difference was, I think, yeah, the biggest difference I've ever felt, perhaps. And I remember, so flying from London to Tokyo, and to be totally transparent, those first few days were just like a blur. And I thought, you know, maybe there could be some value in maybe how to just, I guess, adjust to a new routine, like trying to fix your sleeping pattern, perhaps. Mm. And you know what, on that note, because obviously you do, like, it is important to fix your sleeping pattern when you're in a new country, and obviously adjust to the time zone, and that goes without saying. But you know what, I've been listening a lot to the Mind Pump podcast, as I've said to you, and I remember the other day I heard them mention a really good point, actually, and that's that, and I wasn't actually going to initially mention this, but we can go down this route as well, where most people, even every weekend, they're almost giving themselves jet lag, where, you know, maybe they're following a consistent sleep routine for some days of the week, but then, you know, when Friday and or Saturday comes around, they then end up staying up until like 3 or 4 a.m. And then because of that, they're almost giving themselves a jet lag, because then when Monday comes back and they're back at work, they're, you know, then trying to fight that jet lag again, trying to sort their sleeping pattern out, and maybe they only fix it by Wednesday or Thursday, and then before they know it, Friday and Saturday is here again, and they give themselves jet lag again because they're then sleeping super late. And I'm going down a rabbit hole that I didn't think I was, but that can have some real impact on the body as well. And, you know, I'm not trying to sound like someone who's just like lives a boring life and, you know, they're trying to like quote unquote optimize everything here. But I do think because this isn't even like a marginal thing. I think this has got a much bigger impact than I think a lot of people might even realize within their day-to-day life and just on their general health.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can give you a pretty good example of how usually I deal with jet lag and some of the things I've experienced. I agree with everything you've said. I think you put it, it was a great summary. And I will say, even if you're not trying to optimize your health or everything, jet lag can definitely just impact the overall enjoyment that you get out of life. Like you said, if the first days were a blur, you didn't necessarily enjoy those first days. It's not that they were bad days. It's just that perhaps you weren't as energetic or as present. And if that mood goes on for, let's say, more than a few days, if you never actually try to not optimize but change your circadian rhythm or get back into a routine that actually makes you feel better, then you're always going to be in that state, kind of almost like I am today. It's interesting that you said that, because I did go to bed a bit late
later. We did mention night. That before the podcast.
Yeah, so I am a bit sleep deprived today, and I can definitely feel it. But again, imagine people that do this on a regular basis.
Yeah, maybe every other day, maybe once every 4 days.
Yeah, that's definitely
good. They're constantly fighting their circadian rhythm, I guess is the right word.
Yeah. And it's interesting because that can link or be associated with caffeine as well. Because if you're going to bed late and you're feeling sleep deprived, then you have an extra espresso to get that extra jolt of energy. And it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, that is quite a cycle.
Yeah, and it's more common than you think. At least, you know, speaking from my personal experience and professional experience as well. But some quick tips, like quick fire tips that always help me beat jet lag is, number one, try and get your meals adjusted to, wherever you are. So let's say, and this happened recently, I think when I went to Mexico, I got there, actually I was lucky because I got there at midnight. So even though it was like mealtime here in Portugal, I think, I went straight to bed. Like, that's a no-brainer. And then, you know, get those meals scheduled so that it does help just to get their routine started. But most importantly, I would say try and get some sunlight in the morning if possible. Like, that's very important to establish the circadian rhythm. And this is the probably, I would say, most important tip. Try to get some exercise in on those first, especially on that first day. Just even if it helps you feel a bit more tired and sleep better at the end of the day, it's definitely going to help you readjust to the new time zone. And it's quite interesting. Whenever I travel somewhere, usually I don't get, you know, I don't feel the jet lag when I'm traveling somewhere. But when I'm coming back home, that's when I usually feel it. And I'm
really?
Yeah, and I'm not sure why that happened.
I've heard you actually feel it more when you fly east.
Okay.
So when you fly towards the east, that's when you really feel it. And sometimes, and actually when you fly west, you feel it less.
Okay.
I can't remember why. I think it's something to do with flying in the direction of the way the world is rotating.
I
haven't looked into it enough. This was actually quite a few years ago at university, and I don't remember it too well now, that subject. But yeah, I do remember it's harder when you fly east. And when I flew east to Japan, and 9-hour difference, I've heard, oh yeah, and on this note, I think it's quite just a fun fact. Did you know that to sort out your jet lag, it takes about a day per each hour difference?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So and coincidentally, it did take me about a week and a half to fix my jet lag in Japan. I remember the first day was just like, just whatever. It's like, I can't even remember what time I got there. I think it was like around lunchtime. And I felt like shit because I was on the plane for so long. And I remember by like 6 p.m., I was so tired. And I went to take a nap, forced myself awake at like 8 because I was just so tired. Like, I think the first day, like, I wasn't even thinking about fixing my jet lag. I was just my body was such a mess. Just from water traveling and being in a completely different time zone. But yeah, eventually, obviously, yeah, it's like you said, do start to make a conscious effort to fix it. And, you know, do your best to just, you know, see sunlight when at logical times and start eating meals at times where it makes sense. And yeah, in schedule with the local time. But yeah, those first few days were tough, partly because I was staying in a hostel as well when I first got there. So there were other people staying in my room, and there were tourists as well. And they didn't really give a damn whether they were keeping me up or not. So I quickly changed.
Yeah, I can imagine. It sounds tough.
To be honest, like, now we're here, it won't even affect anyone. This was, you know what, I would say this isn't even too much info. This is just the straight up truth of what happened that first night. I'll never forget. Like, I'm tired. I just got into Japan. It was like a 16-hour journey overall. I'm exhausted. Again, like, I don't even know what time or day it is anymore. It's like 1 a.m. And I was in a hostel, so there's like 7 people in the room, and this couple just starts having sex in the middle of the room. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, I am tired I am so tired right now. And I was just like there. Like, I don't even think it woke anyone else up, but I was already awake because I was already jet lagged.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, no, this is... So I never forgot So that's my first night in Japan for you, which I obviously never forgot. But yeah, I ended up changing rooms after that. So yeah, that was an interesting story. But yeah, that was a slight sidetrack. But yeah, it's, as you said, amending to just the local time and routine is definitely something to think about that helps. Something that helped me was, again, just, yeah, like I already mentioned, was seeing sunlight at logical times and slowly adjusting to the local time with food as well.
Yeah, I agree. And that definitely was a memorable night.
Yeah, I never forgot it. First night in Japan. Like, do you want to hear? Like, sometimes when I'm just talking to people, you know, oh, you want to hear about my first night in Japan? You know what? Another fun fact. This is going to be completely on a completely different note, but nothing completely unrelated. You know, I've met Ben and Jerry.
Okay.
Did you even know they were real people? A lot of people didn't.
I didn't know.
Yeah, fun fact. Yeah, I met them in the US, and I got a free limited edition flavor of Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Nice.
But it wasn't just me, it was a few people, because they're from Vermont, and I did an exchange year in Vermont. And they lived in the same city, I think, at least. But yeah, they definitely lived in the state, so they came by and gave out some limited edition ice cream. So yeah, something to tell the grandkids.
Mm-hmm. What flavor was it?
I don't remember now. This is such a long time ago. But I do remember thinking like, oh damn, this is so cool. My friends aren't going to believe me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure I do.
Okay. Yeah. At the time, it was like, oh, I don't know why I didn't. I should have taken a picture or something.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. You know, just to add on the topic of jet lag, two things I remembered that can actually be interesting on the subject of caffeine.
Yeah.
Like if you're finding, so one of the things is, like you said, you want to either force awake, like set an alarm to make sure that you're not sleeping in, because that's just...
Oh, yeah. That's something I did as well. Yeah, good one.
But if, let's say, you get there in the middle of the afternoon and you're super tired because it's, I don't know, early in your country, or it's getting close to bedtime wherever you're from and you're just sleepy, a bit of coffee can actually help you stay up. Or if it's the other way around, if you're not sleepy and you feel like it would be better to actually sleep, you could take some melatonin to kind of help you get your circadian rhythm adjusted to that new time zone. So melatonin is not something I usually recommend supplementing with, especially long term, because a lot of people, when they are dealing with insomnia, they're like, oh, I should just get some pills. Not just with insomnia, most people resort to meds or pills just to help them get through stuff. But I would say melatonin can actually be quite handy when it comes to dealing with jet lag. But it does depend on how you respond to it. For me personally, usually I don't think it has that much of an impact on me. And I always, always, always wake up with this, not massive, it's not a headache, but it's like there's a weight on my head.
What, when you take melatonin?
Yeah, when I wake up the next morning. It's almost like... there's just a weight on top of my head, which is interesting. I know not everyone experiences this. Some people, they take melatonin, they sleep pretty well. And then they adjust a bit better.
Mm.
There was also something I was going to say about melatonin, but I forget. So if it comes back, I'll let you know.
Yeah, with melatonin, I haven't taken it for a long time. And when I did take it, it was a long time ago. And it wasn't really it wasn't during the time where I was very conscious of, just like what effect it was having on me. Mm. So I can't really add to that melatonin part. But, one thing I actually found helped with my jet lag, and this actually came to me as you were just speaking there, is I didn't do this straight away because, I've been traveling for a long time and my body felt exhausted. But, after like 5 days of being in the country, eventually I signed up to a gym, because I wasn't just on holiday in Japan. Like, when I went there, it was to move there. Obviously if I'm going on holiday for like 2 weeks, I'm not signing up to a gym. But yeah, I was there for what I thought would be a year. I ended up staying for 15 months. And I signed up to a gym, I think on day 5 or 6, same day I used it. And I found that actually exercising really helped me, I found personally, with just fixing my sleeping pattern as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know about you, like, do you feel like that's just like maybe it was a bit of a placebo, or do you think there was some sort of valuable there? Value there, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's one of my most important tips to dealing with jet lag. Probably number one or number two. Too, with the sunlight and adjusting your meals. But yeah, exercise is a no-brainer. It helps.
Mm.
At least from my personal experience, I can tell you if I get a session in, even if it's just going for a long walk, it doesn't have to be the gym. But usually, if you can find a park where you can do some pull-ups, some push-ups, and just move your body a bit, that helps. If you can have access to a gym, perfect, get a good workout in, and you'll feel better, you'll probably sleep better, and it does help you readjust. So yeah.
And you know what, actually this is complete kind of random, actually. It's not as random as some of the subjects I've brought up on this podcast already. But on the note of exercising and Japan, I think this is going to interest you. This is actually something I found out about today, is that, so when I was in Japan, for some context first, when I was in Japan, this was actually, obviously, when I got there was actually like 2 days before the UK lockdown. So when I got there was when like COVID was really like starting to come full force, because I moved there in March 2020. So that's when like a lot of European countries locked down. And coincidentally, like the day after I arrived, Japan just like shut itself off from the world. So they didn't allow anyone else to come in. So I got really lucky. But anyway, so I was doing a lot of exercising outside. But Japan is like, even like just throughout my whole life, it's the only country where I've seen a lot of elderly people exercise in the park. Like I saw a lot of exercise, like elderly people exercising in the park. And the thing is, gyms were only closed in Japan for 6 weeks. So it's not because gyms were closed, like they were only closed for 6 weeks. Like gyms were open for a very long time. And even then I still saw lots of elderly people exercising in the park. And I thought that was quite interesting. Like you'd see loads of people just, they'd go up to the bars, they'd do chin-ups, they'd do pull-ups, they'd do all sorts. And I was like, wow, like that's very impressive. And then I found out today, and I don't think this is a coincidence, that Japan, I think it's called mortality rates. So people pass away from maybe something specific. Yeah. Japan has one of the lowest mortality rates in the world for people who, for elderly people who pass away from falling over. So, you know, sometimes, obviously, I'm sure even just a listener might know someone who's passed away because they've gotten quite elderly and they didn't have that balance anymore. Yeah. And maybe, and something serious happened. Whereas in Japan, they actually have one of the lowest mortality rates for that. And I'll be honest, I didn't fact check that, but it was from quite a reliable source. So I do believe it. So I just thought that was really interesting. And just a fact I thought I'd share.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, naturally, we start losing muscle mass as we age.
Yeah.
And that saying of you either use it or you lose it, it's pretty much the way it goes with muscle mass. And as you get older, you start losing not only your strength, but also your a bit of mobility and just independence, as in you need help to do the basic stuff.
Yeah, balance as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Imagine you go to the bathroom, you need help to get you know, maybe not sitting on the toilet, but getting up from the toilet, you might need a bit of assistance. And if you lose your balance and you fall, and I know this is going to sound a bit dramatic, but if you break a hip.
But no, it's a very real scenario. These things happen. Yeah. And I know you know, and I know, but I think a lot of maybe, you know, listeners, they're not going to be personal trainers themselves, so they wouldn't maybe have ever had to work with an elderly person trying to improve their strength. But we've both seen this firsthand, so it's a very real scenario, and it can certainly happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things a lot of people maybe don't know or never consider is that exercise is not just about, you know, gains and looking good naked,
personal,
right?
Bests and deadlifting 1,000 kg.
Exactly. It's not just about that, but one of the big benefits, especially if we're talking about the elderly, is that exercise also improves bone density. So your bones are literally more resilient, and they're bigger compared to someone that doesn't exercise.
Yeah.
And if you do end up falling, your body is more resilient. You probably, even if you do get a fracture, it's not going to be as bad as if you're just a frail, in this case, old man or old lady. So yeah, I think that's one of the many benefits of regular exercise.
Yeah.
And, you know, a bit of an off topic, but this is going to tie into what you said. A lot of people stop exercising, or they never get into exercise, because they have this all or nothing mindset. So you don't exercise, or you go to the gym every single day, like 2 to 3 times per week. I'm guessing even with COVID, you were seeing a lot of people just, you know, doing pull-ups, chin-ups, push-ups, etc. Even just doing a few sets of each is fantastic.
Oh yeah.
So that's pretty cool. I didn't know that, but yeah. I can definitely imagine. And Japan is on my...
Oh, I would recommend it.
Yeah, I'd like to go maybe next year.
I'm planning to go again, March or April 2024. You'll be going for cherry blossom season. Was that intentional?
Yeah, exactly.
No, but you know, on that subject of just training elderly people as well, I even got a flashback. I think, you know, I've trained a lot of people by now, but even until this day, so when I was training people in person, I don't do one-to-one anymore. I just work online with my Curious Online members. But when I was training people in person, I so many people made so much progress and there was all sorts of wins across the board. But one of, I think, the coolest, like, major signs of progression I ever saw in one of my clients was, I think he was in like his mid-50s. When he first came to me, he couldn't get up from the floor. Like, if he ended up on the floor somehow, he would need all sorts of support to help him get up. So maybe just someone to help him up, or he'd have to hold on to several things. And after working with me for a few weeks, he could eventually get up from the floor by himself. And, you know, it's just small things like that we take for granted in day-to-day life. But it's, as you said, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's just one of those things that are hard to understand or really appreciate until maybe you're in that position. So yeah, that was just a random flashback I had. But was there anything else you wanted to add? Because I've just realized I didn't bring my laptop charger with me and the laptop's close to dying. So this is probably a good time to start winding down the podcast episode. But did you have anything you wanted to add that we can go into? We still probably got like 15 more minutes of laptop juice.
Yeah, you know, on a final note, just to kind of wrap up what you were saying, health is not just health, but health in particular. It's interesting because we don't value it as much until we don't have it. In other words, it's like if you're generally not sick, when you do get sick or even with COVID, you'll miss being healthy.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, damn, this really sucks. Like, I hate feeling like this. I miss feeling good. Same thing when you get an injury. Like, if you usually, you know, can do a lot of basic stuff and then you injure, let's say, your shoulder, and then suddenly you have trouble with, you know, basic things like reaching overhead for a jar or something like that. You're like, ah, oh, man, I wish I could go back to when I didn't have this injury. So it's always like, we only value our strength and we only want to take good care of our bodies when we're actually dealing with something. And again, we're pretty biased, but fitness and regular exercise is literally the best preventive, not sure if I can call it medicine, but a preventive measure you can take to have a strong, resilient body, as in, you know, you'll recover faster, chances of getting injured are, you know, fewer, chances of getting sick also reduce. And if you do get sick, you'll probably bounce back faster. So I think, again, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you already know the benefits of staying healthy and exercise because of Leo. But it definitely is something that has been on my mind, especially even with the elderly. My grandparents, they're not getting younger, and they've been dealing with some things that it wasn't an issue a few years ago, especially with balance and
same.
Yeah. So seeing them age really makes me think that if you can generate as much momentum as possible to age gracefully with, you know, strength, and just maintain, even if you're just maintaining a solid physique, like take care of your strength and take care of your body, you'll live. It's not about living just longer, but living with more quality of life, as in you might be 60, 70, 80, but you don't need help to go to the bathroom. You can get up from the floor if you do fall. You can open that jar if you want the peanut butter. And that for me is invaluable. You know, it's something that I can definitely envision. And I think it's a goal for sure.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a really good point to leave the podcast on. So, Miguel, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Miguel D. Mendez, but with an S.
I'll leave it in the show notes of this podcast, so people can't get it wrong.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. If you're listening from Miguel's side, you can find me at Leo Alves PT, and Alves is spelled A-L-V-E-S. It's not with a Z. Yeah. So yeah, A-L-V-E-S, Leo Alves PT. But I'll also leave those social media handles in the show notes of this podcast episode. But otherwise, again, Miguel, thank you very much for coming on. It was very fun speaking about caffeine, coffee, jet lag, and balance, falling over. So yeah, otherwise, take care, and I'll see you around. Actually, you're still going to be here, so you know, you're not going anywhere. But yeah, take care and see you around to the listener. That wraps it up for another episode of the Leo Alves podcast. I do hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. If you did, then please do consider sharing it with your friends, family, group chat, or even anyone else who you know could be interested in listening to that episode. Otherwise, if you haven't already, then please do leave a 5-star review on whichever platform you are listening to this on. And remember, all the relevant links, such as the inquiry form to potentially become a Kairos Online member, my social media handles, a free fat loss guide, and a free workout plan are all also found in the show notes of this podcast episode as well. Otherwise, take care, and I'll see you around.